Blog Talk Radio.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is all mine, gonna open up their minds. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. Yeah, I'm feeling good today, sporting backpacks and they're on their way. Oh, kinda love the things we like, going to my class, everything's alright. Oh, no one as smart as you, no one as cool as you. No, whatever grade level or type of school, my class is gonna rule, yeah. Now I got my class together, I got my lesson plans together, yeah. You know I got my act together, I'm shaping students that'll shape forever. The greatest changes in the world will almost always start at schools. And you know my mom and daddy didn't raise no fool. I can change the world for better, I can change the world for worse. So I choose to be a teacher and a blessing, not a curse.
Singing this song to open up their eyes, jumping in my ride. Gotta be there all time. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is all mine, gonna open up their minds. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I run my class like I know I should, I'm making young stars like I'm Hollywood.
I thought you understood, I'm the difference in my class for the greater good, yeah.
Getting my class to spread the wind, being at school makes me wanna sing, oh.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
We can change the world together. Teachers, we can make it better.
Change the world.
It feels like it's been cold forever. I think it's time we change the weather.
We can, we will, we must succeed. Children are the future and the future's gaining speed.
If you're gonna grow the plant, then you gotta plant the seed.
And if you're gonna reach a child, it starts by giving them what they need.
I'm singing this song to open up their eyes. I'm jumping in my ride, gotta get there on time. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is on time, gotta open up their eyes.
I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
Teacher, I'm a teacher, yeah,
yeah.
You know, I think I'll start tomorrow.
I don't have that kind of space.
We got all of these excuses.
And we're not doing what it takes.
You're thinking you don't have the power.
Look me in the face.
You have the kind of power
that could change the human race.
I'm singing this song to open up the eyes. You're jumping in my ride, gotta get there on time. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine.
Oh,
class is online, gonna open up the minds.
I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm a teacher, let me see the way you shine.
All right, all right. I love that song. I think that song is so appropriate. Good evening and welcome to The Current State of Education in America. This is a roundtable discussion that we will be having all week long, and it is a celebration of teachers. Tomorrow is National Teachers Day, and I am your host, Demetra Davis. I'm excited to get this started. You may recognize my name from Pledge to Serve. That is another Tribe Family Channel gem that we have. But first of all, I want to thank the Tribe Family Channel, a gumbo for the Soul International Family brand created by our executive producer, Beverly Black. And I'm going to give a shout out to you, Beverly. Respect. Thank you so much for having this show this week. Always staying on point, staying on trend, and looking out for our kids. So I do think that this is a wonderful program to have. And we have an excellent lineup for this week. But before that, I just want to say that the week is sponsored by Gordavi LLC and by Hummingbird and Yellow Rose Productions. And we are excited to sponsor these wonderful guests. Tonight, we have Kathy Wright Lewis. She is an English professor at Medgar Evers College Center for Black Literature. And we also have a special guest on the line who was actually a mentee of Medgar Evers, Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson. And I wanted to, first of all, bring our guest, Ms. Kathy Wright Lewis, on the line. And then I want to ask Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson if he has any words that he would like to say. Kathy, are you here?
Yes, I believe so. Can you hear me?
I can. How are you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing wonderfully. Thank you so much for being here. It's such a pleasure.
I thank you for calling me back.
Yeah. We have so much to talk about, the current state of education in America. And I think with your background that you will have so much to add to this topic, a lot of insight. So I'm definitely looking forward to speaking with you. I wanted to, first of all, see if our special guest here, Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson, the mentee of the late, great Medgar Evers, if he wanted to say a couple words first.
Well, yes, I would like to say how an honor it is to be a part of this program, especially being able to listen as well as speak to one of the educators, Mrs. Kathy Wright Lewis, which really teaches at my mentor's college there. It is really an honor. I just recently found out that there was Medgar Evers College there. And so with me having been led by Mr. Medgar Wiley Evers, this is truly an honor for me to listen as well as to participate in this program. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Wow. It's like having greatness in the room, right? Amazing. Are you here, Kathy?
Yeah, I'm here. I can't believe that Dr. Jackson is honored by my presence. I'm honored by his presence. I mean, I've worked at this school off and on for the last 20 years. We love Medgar Evers. We love teaching the students about him, and for me to get a little more insight from you is truly my honor. So I'm looking forward to hearing what else you can let us know.
Wow, this is going to be wonderful. I can already tell. All right. So, Kathy, I did a brief introduction, very brief. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I'm born and raised right here in Brooklyn. Thank you very much. And I was raised in a very unique community, Brownsville, Brooklyn. It was a mecca for the Black Arts Movement. And some of my teachers were people by the names of Margaret Moore and Yusuf Iman, who was known as Joseph Washington back then in the early 60s and the mid-60s. And he worked under, you used to know him as Leroy Jones, who became Murray Baraka. And God just blessed me to be born in a time and raised in a place where we were standing up and fighting back. So the teacher for Yusuf Iman and the Murray Baraka was, of course, Minister Malcolm X. So I received a lot of his teachings early in life, not even knowing, you know, that that's what it was. But it, for us, that's just what was going on. You know, we were very alert and informed and involved, even as a 9, 10-year-old. I was already a militant. I was already marching and so forth. And that was the time, you know. We're talking about 68 and 72 and years like that. So that's where I'm from. That's my base. That's where I was molded and who molded me. Of course, I had parents who were strong and working in the community. But I became a teacher because I was, you know, we were in the program to integrate. So we forced integration. So we weren't treated very well, right? But I was able to give my students what I never received in the classroom, which was someone who loved them and was from their community, but who spoke their language, you know, and who's going to, you know, we've always been training the students to become teachers and do exactly what we do so that we could continue to build inside the community. It's been a struggle, okay, but we're still swinging out here, you know, so, oh, yeah. So that's what I do. I'm a writer. I'm an author, a published author. I'm the director of the Power in the Pen, the writing workshop I started about 8 years ago, and we help other authors in the community publish their books. And, you know, I still have my hands all in education. I'm at Mecca doing our work here with some young people, bringing the community to the campus. So I stay busy.
Wow. Wow. What a resume. That is fantastic. You know, you said a couple things in there that were just so powerful. And, well, you said a lot of things that were powerful. First of all, coming through the air which you were raised and where you all were, like you said, standing up and fighting back. You know, what a difficult time, but what an experience to be able to say that you were there during that time, you know? What is that like? I mean, for both of you to have that experience, does that come up a lot as you are teaching and as you're talking to students, the civil rights era? Does that come up quite a bit in your conversation?
Do you want me to answer first? Or Dr. Jackson?
Well,
I intentionally bring it up. I bring it up. You know, if they still, because for our students, a lot of them, unless it's Black History Month or Kwanzaa time, you know, when people are bringing up their history, they're not being, of course, schools aren't teaching them their history. Mm-hmm. And unless we're bringing it up, you know, they're not going to find out. So as a teacher, I always had a cultural-based curriculum. That was my pedagogy, has always been my pedagogy, because that's how I was taught in my community. So I knew to engage the students, I had to tell them about who they are and what our history is. So I forced the issue, whether they like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But they love it because
mm-hmm.
they're like, oh, I never mm-hmm. heard that. Oh, I didn't know that happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Right.
What about you, Reverend Dr. Jackson?
Well, before I actually speak about my socialization in the South, Memphis, Tennessee, where my role model, Dr. Martin Luther King, was assassinated, I would like to say to Mrs. Lewis, I listened in on your program titled Power of the Pen. And the round table guests that you had on that program just really was inspiring to me, and I want to congratulate you for having inspired these writers, especially those who had just joined the organization, The Power of the Pen. So that's why I'm honored to be on this program with you, because you were the host of that program. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, sir. Yes, it's Power in the Pen, and that's what we're doing there. Actually writing their stories, writing poetry, responding to what's going on today, and we're publishing books.
Yes, and I, you know, it will be, well, it has been the 62nd anniversary of the Tougaloo Nine, who staged the first read-in in a whites-only library. And, you know, when I left Tougaloo in the spring of 1962, I had put that bit of history behind me, and I came to California in 1968, February the 11th of 1968. And when on that program, when I just made a few comments and everyone applauded Mrs. Lewis in terms of what I said, it reminded me that maybe I am a civil rights icon.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, and everyone, I told the producer, Ms. Beverly Black, I said, well, they applauded, you know, at what I said regarding my experience as a civil rights activist there. I'm just really realizing the important civil rights history that me and my eight colleagues really was involved in. And the library situation was Mr. Medgar Wiley Evers' strategy. It was his planning, because he had already been involved in the boycotting of the businesses in Jackson, Mississippi. And he also was heavily involved in the desegregation of the public schools in Mississippi, as well as his involvement in voter registration. And when I arrived on the campus of Tougaloo College in the fall of 60, the group of youth council members elected me president. And so I that's how I ended up being involved in the civil rights movement and having made civil rights history by walking into that whites-only library and being arrested really for a breach of the peace, just for wanting to check books for my college class. And the idea was, we spent 32 hours in jail just for going to a whites-only library to check out books for our college class assignments. And that was 62 years ago, March 27th, 1961. The Mississippians, the politicians, could have released us the same day, because bond money had been available, but because of the largest parade there in Mississippi on March the 28th, they decided to celebrate the 100th centennial parade, which really commemorated the secession of the state of Mississippi from the Union. And for that reason, they violated our civil rights by refusing to accept the bond money and to have kept us in jail for 32 hours. And so I didn't know whether I was going to live or die, and neither did my colleagues. When I realized that we were not going to be released that night, my mind was really, in a way, preparing myself for my death, the inevitability of death, knowing what we had done. And throughout the night, I agonized over my final hours on this earth. But luckily, we survived that period.
Wow.
Thank God.
Well,
thank God.
Sir, I have to say that you are definitely history walking, and you are just, you've opened so many doors. So I can't imagine the turmoil that you went through mentally and physically, being in that situation. But I do want to tell you, if no one else has, thank you. Thank you for doing that.
You're welcome, because it's related. The library, you know, is really one of
yes.
the most important educational institutions in the United States.
Absolutely.
And mm-hmm. so that's why I'm you know, glad to be a part of this program, especially having heard the program Power to the Pen with the host that mm-hmm. is now speaking and sharing additional experiences of her life. And so, therefore, what? The struggle of black people, we're still in the struggle. And listening
yes,
to
yes,
Mrs. Lewis yes. talk about her upbringing, whether she's in Brooklyn, New York, or whether, like myself, you know, growing up in Memphis, Tennessee, we're all connected in this struggle.
Yes, we are.
And I want to say thank you also. I've always said the library is the most important building in the school, you know, and in the community.
Uh-huh.
And to have to give up, even if it's only 32 hours of your life, that's enough just to be able to make that statement that we should
right.
we should have access to that knowledge. What a powerful statement.
Uh-huh.
I want all of the young people to learn about you and your colleagues and everything that you did, because all too often they've been just confused and they're going in the wrong direction. They'd rather run from a library. You can't drag them to a library, you know. and you know, they don't want to read a book. And I'm saying, okay,
that's right.
You fall right into the trap, and they're like, "What are you talking about? No, you fell right into the trap. This is what they wanted. You have to read. That's where all the information is." So I had to get them books that, of course, are banned and books that they would have never
mm-hmm.
picked up or no one ever showed them, you know. So I always say From Superman to Man by J.A. Rogers, that book turned my life around when I was about 15 years old, and I learned things I had never heard of before. So I know that feeling, and that's what I want for them, that same feeling. And I think it's like
right.
the same feeling you have right now. You got mm-hmm. you know, our hands on the information. Please come in and get this information and understand how important it is. It's life-saving. So thank
right.
you.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What a wonderful conversation. I really do appreciate both of you so much. I appreciate you sharing your experiences and just, you know, being so vulnerable on the show. I really do want to thank you for that. I want to add something just real quick. I also just really push reading. I push it in the community with the young people that I talk to, and I did with my daughter. You know, that was something that we did routinely every night. And I feel like sometimes in this day and age, as we talk about the current state of education, that has fallen off so much. And, you know, to know where the history of our being able to walk into the library, I mean, that's such a, it's like coming full circle for me. But I really think that as an author and as someone who has opened doors to the educational system in and of itself, and I know that I need to take a break here shortly, but I do want to get my question out really quick. do you see that our kids or our young people, because I know you're in a college setting, do you see that they are coming to those settings a bit less prepared in the area of, like, having been reading, having their history, having had time in books? Can you tell that as you teach them?
Yeah. Well, right now I'm training teachers, and I do get to be around the young people, and what I'm seeing, what has trickled down, what COVID has done, the pandemic caused the younger ones, the children who are like 6, 7, 8, who should have been starting school around that time and learning basics and foundations at that time, they're the ones who are really suffering with their skills, because if no one at home was able to teach them how to read and give them those basic phonics and so forth, they're the ones who are really behind. Now, I'm on one hand, I'm concerned, or on the other hand, see, we have a creative genius that nothing can stop. So I know that our black children are going to be okay because they're so creative. I have my great nieces caught up in that. She just found her talents in other places and showing her genius in other places. So I'm like, she's going to be okay. We're just going to get the phonics book out, and we're going to go over the field with it and bring her up to par. But a lot of kids don't have those, you know, people who can do that. And I really think that we need to, as a community, step in and start helping. Don't rely on the schools completely. They're overwhelmed, clearly. So we need to, as a community, help out. I mean, they should be reading in church. They should be reading at home. They should be reading, you know, everywhere they go. They should be reading, you know. And we should be, it should be a, it's a crisis. It should be considered a crisis.
It is a crisis.
Because if they don't learn, they're in an extreme amount of trouble. But we really need to consider it to be a crisis, and to find creative ways of teaching outside of the schools as well as inside of the schools. But now the older kids, they have some more social and emotional issues because of it, and some of them are behind too. But I think they're catching up. As long as we have programs like the ones we have at Mega Evers College, where we reach out, there's a role program, re-envisioning our lives through literature, and we reach out to work with the children in elementary and high schools and the college students. We work with everybody, and to get them all back on the reading levels they should be on. So I think when we have efforts like that and everybody's joining in, we can make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. That's beautifully stated. I mean, I totally agree with you. I think COVID did set us back. I think COVID set, I will say, everyone back, but it set black people in particular, and in education, it set us back because we don't have the luxury of having many times two parents. And so you have that one parent at home who can spend time with you and read to you and you know, do those extra things. And so I think in a situation like COVID, when you have one parent, somebody's got to go to work. And so, you know, we have our kids that are really unfortunately, you know, raising themselves many times with technology. And, you know, getting back to the pages, to turning the pages and actually instilling in our kids a desire to want to read, I think that they will pick that up from us. They copy us. They mimic us. And, you know, I think that not taking the time or not having that time is really something that has hurt our kids. It really has. So I love hearing about the programs that you all have there at Mega Evers, and I think that that's wonderful. Reverend Dr. Jackson, do you have anything on that? And I wanted to ask you if you had anything else to say before we take this commercial break here.
I just wanted to ask Mrs. Lewis, because my 30-year professional career was that of a Los Angeles County deputy probation officer. And I work in the intake and detention control department. And many of the kids that was brought to Los Padrinos Juvenile Hall were kids that fell through the cracks in terms of not having parents to spend time in educating them regarding reading and other educational acquirements. And most of the kids were relegated to special education schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just want to ask Mrs. Lewis, in terms of do you ever encounter kids that have been disadvantaged in that respect, and the lack of educational teachings, because most of these kids that I dealt with actually was not a fault of their own, but it was a lack of educational preparation by way of their parents and the environment that they grew up in. And that was another civil rights commitment that I found out about in Los Angeles with regards to the criminal side. Black and brown kids. Well, we'll send them to a continuation school. Well, a continuation school is the school where they have been labeled as delinquents, and really, they don't matter. And so I want to ask Mrs. Lewis, what about that lack of educational training of those kids, and what is the situation there in your area? Because it saddened me. A lot of the kids that came in there did not really deserve to be relegated to a continuation school, and then later they come to me as a probation officer. And that's when I saw racism all over again, and they were predominantly black and brown kids.
Yeah.
So can you say anything about that particular situation?
Oh, yes, sir. Sadly, that's the majority of the students that I worked with were in that situation. And although, when I first started teaching, in 1983, I was told, you know, I was given a class filled with boys, seventh grade boys, and they said, well, we want you to work with them because this is where we, these are the ones, this is when we start losing them, when they're in the fourth grade, when they start the test, the reading test, and the seventh grade. For some reason, this is when we start losing them. And the principal wanted to have a special program where we would spend more time on literacy with them because this was the age that we were losing them. And we were losing them to the streets. And we were losing them to, you know, like you said, family situations, the parents who might have been in jail. And this was Bedford Stuyvesant, you know, in the 80s. It was rough, you know. So a lot of our kids were going to jail for drugs. Some of their parents were involved in drugs. I've had students who the whole family was in jail or in gangs, that whole situation. It's all, you know, these kids, when they come to school, some of them came just to eat, you know, because they, you know, their parents had such, you know, difficult situations they were dealing with, you know. So we dealt with them. We had one school but I could tell you a bunch of miracles that occurred too. We never let, you know, once they started saying the kids were, one or two, those are the ones who hardly pass the test or don't pass at all. One of the high schools I helped start, called Bedford Academy, the principal there, he and I and the whole team, we decided we would take all the kids, they said, that don't measure up, all of the kids who are going to fail, all the ones in twos, and we gave them extra time. We brought in extra people. We had people who were just coming as apprentices to share some of their knowledge, but everybody joined together to help these children read. And let me tell you, mm-hmm. they all passed the test with flying colors. The majority of them went to college and did all kinds of wonderful things, but we gave them the time, and we gave them the mm-hmm. people they needed in their lives to fill up that void, you know. And I think that's the answer. I know that's the answer. We need to give them some more time instead of running from them. Oh, the kids are bad. They're crazy. They want your attention. They just want your attention. And I think that we really need to give them our attention and help them, because it's horrifying when you don't know how to read and you're terrified that everybody's going to find out, you know, and you're getting the wool pulled over your eyes all the time because you're behind, you know. So I know a lot of kids like that, a lot of young adults like that also, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Thank you all so much. I am just, wow. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with that. I appreciate it. And I think we're going to take a break right now. You all can get a drink. Rest your mouth for a minute. We've been talking for quite a while. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in a couple minutes.
Brooklyn speculative fiction author Kathy Wright Lewis penned and published Mariah Seed, Why Hope Lives Behind Project Walls, Passion's Pride, Return to the Dawning, Mamarelli and Mamarelli's Lessons, children's book series, and a host of poetry anthologies and short stories. Her allegorical, Afrofuturistic works both uncover the history of African Americans in New York City, honors the African ancestors who built the city and those who fought for equality amid centuries of disenfranchisement and massacres. Students in mind, Wright Lewis strategically embedded core knowledge of language skills that ordinarily prevent urban students from mastering language and writing skills within her text. She also uses language and culture that connect students of color and invite them on journeys about their lives. For over 35 years, Wright Lewis served Brooklyn youth, adults, and teachers as a high school English teacher, mentor, UFT teacher trainer, and English professor. She continues to serve students through Megger Evers College Center for Black Literature as program director of Re-envisioning Our Lives Through Literature, and as executive director of her nonprofit, Power in the Pen Writing Workshop, Inc., Kathy Wright Lewis, where culture and literacy and spirit meet.
African-American writer, artist, and storyteller Nikki T. Anthony will be debuting her young adult fiction novel, The Price We Pay, in fall of 2023. Anthony pulls from her own personal experiences and challenges with racism. The granddaughter of a white grandmother, she experienced plenty of both while growing up. Dubbed the To Kill a Mockingbird of the 21st Century, as told from a black perspective, the novel centers on the experiences of 15-year-old Zanetta Henchman as she navigates the treacherous waters of a racially divided small southern town, where she quickly discovers that there's a price to pay for her choices. Anthony hopes her novel will open people's eyes to the damage caused by racism and the consequences of our choices in how we handle them. The Price We Pay is now available for pre-order at www.iamnickytanthony.com.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Those are wonderful, wonderful ads there. I'm going to have to get some of those books. That sounds fantastic.
Thank you.
And definitely want to hear more about power of the pen, power in the pen. Which one is it?
Power in the pen.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely want to learn more about that, too. So when we were talking, well, first of all, for people who have not been listening, I want to let you know I've got Kathy Lewis here, and she's a professor. She's from Medgar Evers, and we've been speaking about the current state of education in America. We've had a wonderful conversation thus far. We've also had the Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson, a mentee of the late, great Medgar Evers. He has been on with us as well. And I wanted to continue our conversation. A couple of things that were said earlier, a couple of really, really standout lines that you said, Ms. Lewis. You were talking about reading and that that right now, it's a crisis. If people, if they cannot read, then they're in a crisis. And that some people might think is too much. I think it is right on point because it is a crisis. And it's something that that people are, you know, they're ashamed of it many times. They don't want other people to know. And because they're in that situation, how can they learn? Who will they tell unless they have someone that they feel comfortable to reach out to? So that's where we have our educators. You know, and another thing that you said earlier was the reason why you became a teacher. You integrated here, and you wanted to be a familiar face. That is so important. That's so important. 6.9% of educators in the university system are African American. And that's all. And you think about that number. How many of us, as we go to school, as we go to the university, how many of us really want to see a professor that looks like us? We want to see that.
Right.
We want to be able to say, how did you get where you are? How did you make it through? Well, did you have hard days like this? You know, did you grow up like I did? But you can't have those conversations if you don't have the instructors and the professors there to talk to. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? What do you think about that, Ms. Lewis?
I think it's imperative to have someone who looks like you, who can, and someone who's actually from your community. So they, this is, I used to see my students when I taught at Boys and Girls High School, I lived right down the block, you know, maybe three blocks down. So I'd see my students in the supermarket, you know. I'd see them and their parents, you know, walking down the street. You know, we might see them on the schools that I was most successful in were schools where some of my students, their parents went to the same church I went to. So we had our eyes on them, you know. I knew their parents, and they wanted their children to come there so that somebody who knew them would be there to give them that extra care, to grab them if they were going the wrong way. So that, there's that factor, and then there's the black factor, somebody who could tell you about who you are and where you're from, where you truly are from. And that made such a major difference. I understood what they were saying. You had people from other cultures. Maybe you didn't understand what the kids were saying so much. Oh, the kids are bad. The kids are crazy. I'm like, no, they're trying to tell you this. You just don't understand. You know, and they have a fear of our children. So you walk in and you're scared of the kids. You know, come on. You're not going to get anywhere with them. They know that you're scared. They know you don't care. You know, they can tell it. They can smell it. So, you know, and they're not going to respond well. So when we take away all those barriers, you know, we make it easier for the children to learn. They give them a reason why they should learn, because some of them are coming and saying, you know, life is so hard. I don't even see why I'm here. What am I here for? When I, you know, when my life is doomed, you know, if I'm not going to make it past 21, why am I even here? So you have to make them see that there's more to their lives. So you do. You have to care, and you have to be able to tell them their history and tell them why, you know, I told my students all the time, you know, there wouldn't be triggers pointing at you if you weren't so, you must be dangerous. You must be an amazing person that people want to get rid of you on the planet. You have a lot to give. Don't ever, ever give up and think that you're nothing. You're everything, you know. So who's going to tell them that if we don't tell them that? Everybody's not going to tell them that, you know. So we have to be able to lift them up. You know, you have to be able to lift them up. So it does. It makes a difference. I didn't have any black teachers until my last year of college. And he cracked up because I said, man, where have you been? And he just started laughing.
See? That's right. Where have you been? You look for that face. You look for that connection. Absolutely.
That's not easy. Right, but I thank God that I'm from Brownsville, so I might have dealt with that in the daytime, but when I came home, the people who love me, you know, but now they don't have that either. The kids don't have that. They don't have it.
Yeah. You know, everything that you're saying, it just goes back to what, you know, people throw it around nowadays, and it really doesn't hold as much weight, but it takes a village, you know, and it does take a village, and it should hold weight, because, you know, you seeing the parents and the kids in the supermarket, that's a big deal, because what that is accountability. Mm-hmm. You know, if I see your teacher at any time, she could tell me anything that you're doing in school, you know. So that's accountability.
Absolutely.
And also, the students, they know that. They knew that my mom and my teacher, they talked. You know, I was at every meeting. Those two, they knew Kayla's mom is coming. She's going to be here. You know, single parent or not. I want to know what's going on with my daughter. Yeah, so I think that you expressed a lot when you said that, you know, because that's a missing piece as well, is the division that we have. You know, you bust kids in from one neighborhood, and the parents, they never see the teachers. They don't really know them, or either they're working so much they can't come to these school functions, and so the kids know. You know, you don't know my mom. You'll never see her. You don't know my dad. So I think that you hit on quite a few things there. So. You know, the current state of education, when you think of that statement, what comes to mind for you when you think of that?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yes, ma'am. When you hear the current state of education, just that statement, the current state of education, knowing that it applies to us as Black people, being specific, what comes to mind for you, the current state of education?
Unfortunately, I think of children not receiving what they should. I see the unbalanced system. I know what the private schools do and what they look like. These students, they're like 8-1 in the classroom, 8 children, 1 teacher. They get all the attention they need. Of course, you know, paying a lot for it, but education should be the same for all. I think it's so unfair. It really creates the divide. You know, we have a school, a prison pipeline that's clear. You know, we can see, we know from the years, Adelaide Sanford, Dr. Sanford taught us, they decided that they would build their prisons upstate New York based on how many children were failing, how many Black children were failing. You know, so we literally, you know, help them live by, you know, getting our students being, our children being institutionalized in these jails. They pump the drugs in so the kids have nothing else to do to make money but to sell the drugs, and they get caught up in the whole thing. It's all so unfair. I really think that, I think it's devastating. I think it has devastated our community, and I think that it needs to change. And I think it really needs to be completely torn down, disassembled, and really made, created with humanity and the future in mind, because we can't keep killing off the kids thinking that the future is going to be bright. That's not going to happen. They're needed for the future. They have the bright ideas. They have their genius. They deserve to thrive, and I think that we really need to support that revamping of the entire school system.
Wow. Yes, ma'am. It should be fair. It should be equal. In a country like the United States, where we are wealthy now, maybe not individually, but this country is wealthy. So the idea of our children being educated differently makes no sense to me, because the children are all in America. This is our future. This is our future. I don't understand the divide, but we know why.
Well,
we know why. And, you know, you said it should be, our educational system should be rebuilt and basically infused with humanity. Absolutely, because that's missing. And earlier you mentioned the fear, and that kids can smell it if you're afraid of them. If they know that you're afraid of them, why should they trust you? And why should they buy into what you're trying to teach them? You can't teach if you're afraid. So it's all like a catch-22. It's just a circle, a vicious circle. And so, you know, everything that you've said this evening is right on point. But that goes with all of your experience and everything that you've done. So I want to thank you for sharing with us, and I want to also ask you if you have any final comments before I get you to share any information you might want to share with our audience about how to contact you.
Oh, okay. I guess my last comment would be get involved, please. If you're listening in, if you think that you don't make a difference or you can't make a difference in the life of a child, you really can. Our children are resilient, but they can take with so much. They're in need of love, and they're in need of community. And we need to recreate our communities. We need to care again. We need to come back out and get involved in whatever you can get involved in. But even if you just teach somebody how to read, it could be the parents because some of them, they can't teach their children because they don't know how to read either. You know, just get involved. We are needed as a community. It's time to stand together again. And we were so much stronger when we did that. So we need to do it again. We just need to do it in everybody's little corner, wherever, your church, your community center, wherever. Volunteer at a school, you know, but get involved. We need more people. We need more people involved.
Absolutely. We need that village. We need that village to come together.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Okay. All right.
Yes.
And I'm going to ask our executive producer here if Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson is still on, if he has any final comments, and tell him thank you so much for being here.
Well, I can't thank you, the moderator, for really being passionate about education and the plight of our young people when it comes to really improving their educational skills. I'm honored that you are the host of this show, which will go on for the remainder of this week, honoring teachers. And as far as our guest, Mrs. Kathy Wright Lewis, I want to thank you for blessing me with your experiences with regards to your love and your commitment, you see. Listening to you,
yes, sir.
This is what I hear coming from you. And I am really committed in every respect. When I was working with the minors there in the juvenile hall, and I came to realize that among my colleagues, to them it was just a job and a paycheck.
Yeah.
And some of my colleagues, they would pass by my interviewing room and they would see the kids in there, some of them crying and everything. Well, I used my job to teach them about the criminal justice system. And I found out, like you said, Mrs. Lewis, when you take the time to sit down and talk with these youngsters, they know who really is committed to them, and as opposed to not just going through the motion. They know, and that's what I have heard you say over and over again. What we must get involved, and I'm going to say this: one of my colleagues met me at work. And he said, man, how is it that you're smiling coming into a detention center? I looked at him. I said, you know, the reason I'm smiling is because to me, this is a ministry, but to you, it's a job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right.
Hello.
And that's all I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
sir.
Thank you. I know what you mean.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Thank you so much for being here. You've really honored us with your presence. And I tell you what, Ms. Kathy Wright Lewis, English professor, Medgar Evers College Center for Black Literature, and passionate professor, and I can tell you have a great love for your students. So what a wonderful way to kick off this week. I am just excited for the rest of the week and our conversation in this current state of education roundtable discussion. I really hope that you all will join us every night. Tomorrow we will have Mr. Jerry Green, and I'm looking forward to it. So thank you so much. Thank you, Ms. Lewis, for being here. And thank you, Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
You do the same. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you.
My honor.
In the world, and God we trust, an architect, doctor, maybe an actress, but nothing comes easy, it takes much practice. Like, I met a woman who's becoming a star, she was very beautiful, leaving people in awe, singing songs, Lena Horne, but the younger version, hung with the wrong person, got a strong on that, sniffing up drugs, all in her nose, could have died so young, now looks ugly and old, no fun, cause now when she reaches for hugs, people hold their breath, cause she smells of corrosion and death. Watch the company you keep, and the crowds you bring, cause they came to do drugs, and you came to sing, so if you're gonna be the best, I'ma tell you how, put your hands in the air, and take the vow, I know I can, be what I wanna be, if I work hard at it, I'll be where I wanna be. Listen again. This is for grown-looking girls who's only 10. The ones who watch videos and do what they see. As cute as can be, up in the club with fake ID. Careful, for you meet a man with HIV. You can host a TV like Oprah Winfrey. Whatever you decide, be careful, some men be rapists. So act your age, don't pretend to be older than you are. Give yourself time to grow. You're thinking he can give you wealth, but so young boys. You can use a lot of help, you know. You're thinking life's all about smoking and ice. You don't want to be my age and can't read and write. Begging different women for a place to sleep at night. Smart boys turn them in and do whatever they wish. If you believe you can achieve, then say it like this. I know I can. Be what I wanna be. If I work hard at it, I'll be where I wanna be. Now, go. We came to this country, we were kings and queens, never porch monkeys. There was empires in Africa called Kush, Timbuktu, where every race came to get books to learn from black teachers who taught Greeks and Romans, Asian Arabs, and gave them gold. When gold was converted to money, it all changed. Money then became empowerment for Europeans. The Persian military invaded, they heard about the gold, the teachings, and everything sacred. Africa was almost robbed naked, slavery was money, so they began making slave ships. Egypt was the place that Alexander the Great went. He was in shock that the mountains were black faces, shot up their nose to impose what basically still goes on today, you see. If the truth is told, the youth can grow, they'll learn to survive until they gain control. Nobody says you have to be gangsters, read more, learn more, change the globe. Ghetto children, do your thing. Hold your head up, little man, you're a king. Young princess, when you get your wedding ring, your man is saying, she's my queen.
I know I can.
Be what I wanna be. If I work hard at it, I'll be where I wanna be. Save the music, y'all.
Tri-Family Channel.